Well, good evening. Welcome to the fifth in our series of foundational teachings. We'll start out with Yusatsu giving a couple of announcements.
So this Saturday morning, starting at 9:15, there's an opportunity to give some volunteer time out in the garden, and no gardening experience is necessary. There's more information on the website. And our next overnight retreat is Seijiki, which starts October 22nd, and registration is open on the website. And you don't have to stay for the whole thing. You can register for particular days and or nights. Thanks.
And we will be talking about retreats and sesshin next week, next Wednesday. So, very apropos to Seijiki coming up. I'm going to pass it off to Reju to talk about last week's prompt.
Did everyone get a sheet from Jay? Cool. So we'll come back around to that. But first, just a check-in about the prompt from last week or anything else from last week. So the prompt to consider that we offered at the end of last week, and it's totally fine if you weren't here, was based on a quote from the Dalai Lama, who's the leader of Tibetan Buddhism. The quote was, "The Buddha taught the four ways to bring together the disciples, and this was to ensure the welfare of others. The six perfections are practiced to achieve one's own good, and the four ways of bringing together the disciples to achieve the good of others. This involves, first of all, giving material gifts, then practicing right speech, then providing help, and finally harmonizing one's words and acts. Above all, it is important to keep this last point in mind. If we do not master our own mind, it is impossible to master the minds of others. We do not know whether or not it is possible to master the mind of another, but it is what we are supposed to do. Whatever the case, it is essential for those who claim they wish to help others that they control their own minds." So the prompt was, how does that land for you? And how do you see yourself as a disciple of the Buddha in this paradigm? So we'll just have a few minutes for reflections on that prompt or anything else that arose for you after class last week.
Hello, this is Thomas. It landed for me. I often find myself, or at least have often found myself, just like catching myself wanting to say or do something and being like, that would not actually be helpful here. Because like I have enough experience following that instinct of saying or doing a thing and just not landing the other person. Like it was not received well because it was like presumptuous or, just not skillful, broadly construed. And part of like restraining the impulse is like I feel like mastering my mind. And like when I'm able to like just let things unfold naturally, I find that often has led to like better relations, just better outcomes. Yeah. And as far as feeling disciple of Buddha, it feels like the wisdom of non-action and non-seeking. It's like, oh, okay, that kind of makes some sense to me now. So that's kind of neat. Oh, I did have one question though. There are four ways of bringing disciples together. Is that a reference to Brahma Viharas or is that something else? Cool. Something else.
Hi there, my name is Max. So 2 points on this excerpt. The first is more of like a semantic critique, literary, pointing out, which I thought it was interesting to note that this excerpt comes from a book called Beyond. And it's interesting to note that it was a talk given in France. and translated from Tibetan into French, and then later published from French into English. So my initial reaction was there could be a translation error, because mastering others' minds doesn't seem to me initially to be sort of like a canonical Buddhist sort of notion. So that's one sort of critique. And then the other interpretation could be from more of like a non-dual perspective, where by realizing the true nature of reality, you simultaneously liberate all sentient beings, which is kind of like a theme in Dzogchen and non-dual teachings. And there could be some connections there. But I did think it was interesting, because my initial reaction was how mastering others' minds might be a translation error, because it went from Tibetan to French and then later from French into English between multiple translations. So anyway, that was my kind of sense of it. Thank you.
Maybe just one more. Is that a hand? I think I missaw. It was just hopeful.
Anybody? I was thinking about his comment that I'm not sure whether it's possible to master others' minds or understand others' minds. And I was just thinking to myself, lots of times figuring out my own mind is as difficult or mysterious as figuring out somebody else's.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's my experience too. All right. Do you want to do this?
So tonight we're going to be looking at koans and some suttas from the Pali Canon and some sutras from more recent writings. We're going to do that by breaking up into groups and working on a little project in a group. So that's the papers that you have. So is that enough explanation to get us? I mean, we need to know where to go. Oh, okay. That's right. It's on the sheets. Reiji was very organized. So three groups are meeting here in the Zendo, and then one group is meeting in the entryway, and then two groups in the dining room. And so look at the top of your sheet and go to the place that it says to go and meet your group.
Group one, the Kishidagarbha group, yours continues on the back. Everyone else is just on the front. Yes. There's instructions.
When you get to the place. It's kind of like a treasure
hunt. It's a treasure hunt. It's a Dharma treasure hunt.
All right. Let's take a minute to hear from each group. So this is actually a literal minute that each group has to share out. So who is... Group one, who's speaking up for group one?
Hello, this is Donald. My group did Kshitigabara's Fundamental Vows Sutra. It was really nice to hear everybody's take on it. I feel like it was a much longer one, and so feel like we all had to read it a few times, kind of grasp the names and everything that was going on. But there's a really beautiful story of basically becoming a bodhisattva and how that kind of compassion and that the love of it at the end. There was three bodhisattvas that came out. Everybody who was in the story was a bodhisattva at the end of it, and they all came out for the better. So there was a lot of ideas about like how cyclical everything is in the group.
I will actually share ours because it's so short. Layman Pang and his daughter Ling Zhao were selling bamboo baskets. Coming down off a bridge, he stumbled and fell. When Ling Zhao saw this, she ran to her father's side and threw herself on the ground. "What are you doing?" cried the layman. "I saw Daddy fall down, so I'm helping," replied Ling Zhao. "Luckily, no one was looking," remarked the layman. Themes that we identified that were interesting in this riddle koan were the immediacy and exuberance of Ling Zhao to throw herself down at her father's side. And we questioned the interpretation of what that helping was. Was the helping her willingness? Was it to mimic or mirror? Was it to normalize falling or imperfection? Was it playfulness? We don't know.
Group three.
So we had the story of Seju's two souls and our shared collective experience, voidness, emptiness, spaciousness, stillness, as if in a dream, soulmates, ghosts, spirits, transcendental nature of love, collective simultaneous reading was rich, joyful, positive of relationship, interconnectedness, relaxation arose in shared reading, comprehension increased, luminous awareness and shared experience, tenderness, raw romantic drama, meaning emerged in shared experience.
Under time. and group four.
We had Miaoshan Lauren's bamboo bucket, and it is about a nun who had been unable to attain the fruits of meditation for a long time, but they don't say how long. And she wrote a poem after the bucket, bottom of the bucket fell out. And what spoke to most of us was the first line of the poem: "In this way and that, I tried to save the old pail," which was a metaphor for the old self. And there was also some discussion about the bamboo strip being elastic and pliable, and then it just wasn't that way anymore. So it broke.
Group five.
Hello. Group five talked about the Upada Sutta, and that had to do with talking about how admirable friendship, admirable companionship, and admirable camaraderie is the whole of the holy life. And then just as a group, we were talking about how this gave us a lot of feelings of peace and relief. Thinking about how having sturdy community and friendships can help us to sometimes have security in ourselves and our own, you know, sometimes individual path. And we, the word admirable stood out to a few of us in relation to these admirable friendships, admirable companionships, and camaraderie.
Group six, way over there. Our sutta seemed to be three sales pitches for conviction. The first is very straightforward. If you have it, you get things first. People treat you better. Most of us weren't very sold on that one.
The second one was more poetic, and it's a metaphor involving a tree and birds. And some people liked that pitch better. Some people felt like you actually didn't want to be the tree in that metaphor, and it was kind of problematic. The third one is the most abstract and essentially says in a very abstract way that those with conviction will get to be freed from effluence, or you get to drop your shit. And we all liked that one a lot.
I think we're on group seven now.
Our group had the excerpt from chapter 12 of the Lotus Sutra on Nagadeva. We all had kind of similar physical sensations. Well, actually, our physical sensations are different, but we all had similar negative physical sensation reaction to it, especially the first part where it's about, this ties in some of the memorable phrases, the female body is polluted. This is one talking about like how it's possible for a woman to become a Buddha. And then the daughter of Naga King is like, well, actually, watch this. And she transforms into a man and does all the things that are super cool to people back then. And everyone's like, wow, awesome. And so it's part of our reaction was, in various ways, what's the significance for us in our contemporary context? Like, what meaning does this have for us here and now? We can make a story of like how back then maybe there was something progressive about this, difficult now. And that's kind of our spiel.
All right, thank you. Some really rich sharing. It was really lovely to hear. Okay. Quickly going to give you the prompt for next week, which is also on one of your papers. It's on the handout. So Zen teacher Domyo Burke, who is Kakumyo's Dharma sibling, so that makes Domyo my Dharma aunt, says, I like the term natural koan to signify everyday life koans as opposed to formal koans of Zen literature, some of what we looked at tonight. Natural koans are obstacles that arise in the course of our personal lives, which we then identify as koans and engage with them as such. In a sense, then, we start from personal experience and try to find within it what is universal and dharmic. In formal koan work, you start from the universal and dharmic and work to make it personal. Both ways are challenging, if for different reasons. So questions for you to consider this week. What koans arise in your everyday life, and how do you work with them? Thank you for joining us tonight. We'll get ready for Vespers now.